is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik with Howard Wilkinson. This afternoon, we're talking about proposed Stand Your Ground legislation in the Ohio General Assembly, which would eliminate a person's obligation to retreat if they believe his or her life is in danger. You can join the conversation by calling us at 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Joining us to talk about gun control laws in Ohio are attorney Janaea Trotter-Bratton, legal chairwoman of the National Action Network, and State Representative John Becker of Claremont County, a co-sponsor of the pending Stand Your Ground bill. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, we're going to talk about a lot of subjects today about guns and gun control and gun rights. But I wanted to start off with House Bill 203, which is the Stand Your Ground legislation. John, you are a co-sponsor of this.
Correct.
As I understand it now, under state law, individuals can defend themselves and their property, but they have an obligation to retreat if they're able to do so in a safe manner. This would remove that. Is that an accurate description? And why? And if so, why is this necessary in Ohio at this point?
Well, Howard, I believe it depends where you are. I think if you're in your home or in your car under current law, state law, there is no duty to retreat. So in essence, it expands on that, and it says that if you are in any place you are legally allowed to be, so if you're on a public sidewalk, for example, then the duty to retreat would be removed.
And this is necessary. Why?
Well, it's a matter of, you know, trying to help the would-be victims or prevent them from becoming victims or give them more options, you know, if they are accosted.
Well, clearly, in the Trayvon Martin case, the jury in Florida heard, you know, about the Stand Your Ground law in the state of Florida, and George Zimmerman was acquitted. And a lot of people looked at it and said that is the reason why. Here in Ohio, I know the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus, and Janaea, you have been involved in some of the efforts to try to stop this. Why do we have to draw the line here in Ohio? There's 26 states that have such laws.
Well, in Ohio, and I can't speak for the other states, I'm only licensed to practice in Ohio. But in Ohio, we have adequate self-defense laws. And so wherever you are, you do have the right to defend yourself. You don't have the right to go after someone to defend yourself. But if someone accosts you or comes up to you and you feel like your life is in danger, they have a gun, they have a knife, or they are exhibiting deadly force upon you, you have the right to defend yourself. And so to broaden a law beyond the self-defense laws that we already have, one, I don't feel is necessary, and I think, quite frankly, that it's dangerous.
And this would broaden it in what way?
This would broaden it, in my opinion, to at least with self-defense, you have to kind of what I call an articulable suspicion. So you have to be able to articulate exactly what it was that someone was doing to you that you felt so threatened. And they actually have to be doing something. So it can't be, I was scared and I shot them. It has to be, they pointed a gun at me. They pointed a knife at me. I think that when we get to the point where people arbitrarily can say, I felt scared, and that is why I killed someone, then we run into issues. Law enforcement can't even do that. When we look at law enforcement investigations and law enforcement has used deadly force against someone, what do they have to do? The first thing they do is they get put on desk duty, and then they're investigated, right? So they're asked, well, what happened here? What made you feel like you needed to use this deadly force? And they can't just say, well, you know what? I was scared, so I pulled my gun out and shot them. No, there are certain actions that even officers have to take. And so we're possibly expanding law now to give private citizens to make a decision about whether or not to kill someone than even law enforcement or the court has. So, and for instance, menacing. obviously someone feels threatened. That's the basis of that particular charge. It's a misdemeanor charge. The most that someone can get for menacing, that's not aggravated menacing, but just menacing, is 30 days. That's what law enforcement and that is what the courts can impose. Now we're saying you can die for menacing. And all menacing is an exchange of words that made you feel threatened.
Representative Becker, what do you think?
Well, I agree with a whole lot of what Janaea just said. You can't just shoot somebody unless your life is threatened. You know, if you're scared, so I pulled a gun and shot him. You know, good luck, you know, defending yourself in front of a jury with that one. So, you know, the idea of the stand your ground isn't to, you know, give, you know, more options for to shoot people or more reasons to shoot people. It's a matter of, you know, if you feel that your life is threatened, and again, you have to convince a jury of that regardless, then the question will come up, well, why didn't you run away? What about the duty to retreat? And so it takes away that particular argument when you're trying to defend yourself. I mean, for example, if you're a woman and you're being accosted by a would-be rapist, you don't want to have to go into the courtroom and explain why you didn't run away. You know, you felt that your life was threatened and you felt the only way out of the situation was to pull a gun and shoot him. So you have to, you know, you have to be able to convince a jury of that, you know, regardless whether it was stand your ground or not.
Does House Bill 203 actually set parameters on what constitutes that kind of a real threat to your life?
No, I did read through the bill. I didn't write the bill. It was authored by Terry Johnson in Portsmouth.
Right.
But I'm one of the co-sponsors on the bill, which simply means when it goes around for co-sponsor support, you can sign in. Mm. And I was just an early supporter, and that's my involvement in the bill. But no, it doesn't do anything like that. It just expands on the current law. Where you whether you're in your home or in your car, you have the the stand your ground.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to a caller. And if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 513-419-7100. You also can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. You can post them there as well. We're going to go now to Jay from Northside. Hi, Jay. What's your comment or question? Oh, my goodness, Jay, you are breaking up. I can't hear you at all. So we're going to ask you to call back. Maybe you just your cell phone is in a bad area, but please do call back. I know he's been hanging on for a long time. I'm sorry, Jay, but we just can't hear you. Thank you so much. Do call back. Maybe we can get that taken care of, but it was impossible to hear him. He perhaps is driving. Apparently, he sounded fine a little while ago.
Janaea, what's being done? I mean, obviously, there's a legislature in Columbus right now, which is very sympathetic to these kind of measures.
Mm-hmm.
What is being done to try to stop House Bill 203?
Well, right now there's more of a grassroots effort, just signatures being collected, petitions asking that the bill they not vote on the bill, that the bill be repealed. And just really trying to educate. I mean, the reality of it is, though, and I think we realize that we're not in the greatest position with how many votes that we have. So the reality is trying to get people to understand that you have a significant portion of the population who is very much against it. And for the most part, and I won't say for the most part, but a large portion of the population that is against it is the African-American population. And it's a sensitive time right now after Trayvon Martin for even the introduction of this bill. And so I don't even think that, you know, it's great to have dialogue, but you have to time your dialogue properly. And when you lose a life, and it's a very sensitive issue because African-Americans right now feel like they are targeted, especially young Black males and parents of young Black males. And so in that, when you have this bill, the first thing that people are thinking is this could be me. And so I think that it's ill-timed, and I don't think that we can even really have the greatest constructive dialogue.
John, what about the timing of this? I mean,
Glad you asked about that, because this bill was introduced long before the Zimmerman Martin case in Florida. So there is no relationship to it at all. It just it got national attention about the issue in Florida, and then because there was a bill that does that in Ohio that was already in the General Assembly. So this had already been in place. And well, you know what Janae was saying about you know, people getting involved in a petition process, and that's what people should be doing, regardless of what side you're on. I mean, you know, public involvement and contact your representatives and tell them you're either for the bill or against the bill. That's the democratic process, and I'm all for it.
We have Jay from Northside back. We hope he comes through better this time. Hi, Jay. No, apparently it's a problem with, I don't know if it's our system. It must be our system. It's just not working. I'm so sorry. If you would email the question to talk@wvxu.org, we will do our best to get it on for you. I'm very sorry. We'll go now to David from Claremont County. Hi, David. What's your question? Apparently our phone system is not working today, so we're going to ask folks right now until we can get that taken care of to please email your questions, talk@wvxu.org.
But going back to this timing issue in the Trayvon Martin case, you know, obviously that's going to be the focus of the opposition to this thing, and it's going to make this passage of this very controversial if it happens. Janae, I mean, do you if this bill passes and becomes law in the state of Ohio, what do you see happening next? Do you see any kind of possibility of a petition repeal effort or?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I definitely, once it's passed, I mean, you have to be realistic about your position. So once it's passed, it's going to be harder to undo what's been done than it would be to try to prevent it from being done in the first place. But it's not like we will go away. Frankly, it's a law that you don't need. You don't need it. And I don't know if it, you know, it makes people feel better. But, you know, an example, Forest Park, there was a two people involved in a road rage incident. And one person got out of the vehicle. This was by Winton Road. One person got out of the vehicle, had a knife in his hand, went around the other car. The other person had a gun, shot him. Now, could that person have driven off? The other person only had a knife. Could he have driven off? They were at a light. Yes, he wasn't stopped by anything in front of him, but he decided that he was going to shoot the person. Was he justified in shooting the person? Yeah, you come at me with a knife. Yeah. And he was in his vehicle, though, but they did not say that he had a duty to retreat. I think if he was outside of his vehicle, he wouldn't have had a duty to run away, because you don't know if somebody's going to throw a knife at you. You don't know what they're going to do. And so he was not prosecuted at all because self-defense. So for me, our laws are adequate to provide for self-defense. I mean, I think these are some perfect examples. And the only time that that, you know, the stand your ground legislation is going to come up in front of a jury is if it gets to a jury. But before it gets to a jury, it has to pass through the prosecutor's hands to decide whether or not they're going to prosecute the case at all. And that's really where the decision making process is. You know, realistically and honestly, I don't think that the prosecutors in Florida wanted to prosecute that case very much. I think that public pressure made them prosecute the case, and I don't think they put on their best case at all anyway, while they decided to prosecute it because they didn't want to. But so the point is that half the time it's not going to get to a jury. It's going to go through the prosecutor's hands first. And now if you have this legislation in place, you're probably not even going to go to court. Prosecutor going to say, we have these stand your ground laws now. They had a right to stand their ground. And I just think it brings up so many issues, new issues that we don't need. So
Representative sure. Becker.
Well, sure. The case in Florida, you know, there's open debate on whether Zimmerman, you know, should have followed the guy, probably shouldn't have. Of course, in hindsight, obviously he should not have. Was the fight provoked? I mean, that's certainly a valid question here. But regardless of all of that, Zimmerman did not pull his gun until after his head got pounded into the concrete. I mean, you know, to me, that's showing great restraint. And, you know, if you try to put yourself in the position of a victim, and Zimmerman here was a victim, let's not forget that case or that particular fact, that, you know, you figure you're scared, your adrenaline is flowing, you know, what are you going to do? You know, if you believe your life is threatened under those circumstances and you have the ability to defend yourself, if that means pulling a gun, then you're going to pull the gun and do what you have to do to defend yourself, to protect your life. If you can, if there's a way to escape that situation, then all by all means you should escape and withstand your ground. If there's a question about that, those are the kind of things a jury will decide.
And I disagree that Zimmerman is a victim, because Trayvon Martin was walking home doing nothing to bother anyone. He was followed. And so for me, this is like me, a woman, walking to my car at night and I hear footsteps behind me and I figure out somebody is following me. To me, understand your ground. If I'm threatened to a point where I'm walking in the dark and I think someone is about to accost me, and then I turn around and I punch you, realistically, how would I then not be standing my own ground? So that is a problem for me, that anyone can walk up and start a fight. Because I think that we can hopefully all agree that this situation would have never happened if Zimmerman would have just sat where he was and waited for the police. And so he followed Trayvon Martin. As a kid walking in the dark, I'm sorry, I think he was scared. And so you turn around and even whoever provoked, I mean, I think Zimmerman provoked the fight. When you walk up to somebody and it's dark and you've scared me because you're following me in the dark and I turn around and punch you, and then because you're losing a fight now you can kill me. Who has the right to stand their ground? So can you stand your ground until you're winning a fight? And then once you are winning the fight, then somebody else has a right to kill you. And then we get into the back and forth. And so I don't agree Zimmerman was a victim at all. I feel like he was a perpetrator. When you seek someone out, you are a perpetrator. If someone is following me, I think I would be scared.
We're talking this afternoon to Janaea Trotter-Bratton of the National Action Network and State Representative John Becker of Ohio about gun control laws in Ohio. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. You can send us your questions by emailing us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik with Howard Wilkinson. We continue our discussion of Stand Your Ground proposed legislation with Ohio Representative John Becker and attorney Janaea Trotter-Bratton. You can join the discussion by calling us at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And we do think our phone lines are working now. So if you did try to get in earlier, please try back now. We're going to give it another shot. Again, our number is 513-419-7100.
John, one of the points that Janaea made was that, in her opinion, Ohio already has self-defense laws. You can defend yourself in most cases. Why, I guess the question is, why with House Bill 203 do you want to open this scab, which is, you know, really very emotional issue for a whole lot of people in this state?
Well, Howard, there was no scab when House Bill 203 was introduced. This was before the, you know, the case in Florida. And the, you know, in terms of the stand your ground portion of it, and in fact, it was, you know, when the controversy came out about the whole case, I had to read through the bill just to see exactly what did it say on that particular topic. And like I said, it just really expands the current law, you know, where it's not just in your house, but in your, you know, or your automobile, that if you're in any place you're legally allowed to be, such as a public sidewalk. And the whole idea is that if, you know, if you're in a position where you are forced to shoot somebody to save your own life, you know, with the Stand Your Ground legislation, it makes it easier for the victim to defend his actions.
You, in Ohio right now, in a General Assembly, there are a number of bills dealing with concealed carry. You've sponsored at least one.
I got a total of four gun-related bills.
Is that right at this point?
I think Terry Johnson has, I don't know, one or two out there. Ron Magg, I think, has one or two out there.
And in Ron Magg's case, he is asking to expand the venues in which you can take a concealed weapon.
Yeah, the gun-free zones.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you do too, and to a certain extent, in terms of a bill which says that public employees should be able to bring concealed weapons into what, non-secured buildings?
Non-secured government buildings, yes.
Ohio is a concealed carry state, obviously, and it's been one of the most active in terms of the number of permits that have been issued. And your county, Claremont County, is actually leading the state in terms of the number of permits issued.
That's a good thing.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Why is it a good thing? And I want to hear from Janae on this too, but why is it a good thing? And can you explain to me how, you number one, you get a concealed handgun license? What kind of training, what kind of background checks and that sort of thing are necessary?
Well, sure. I do have a concealed carry permit. So I'm going to go from memory here of what I went through to get it. And I did, and I have renewed it once. But the initial process was, I don't know, I filled out an application, paid a fee to do that. I don't remember the amount of the fee, $35 or something like that. There was an FBI background check that had to be done. They took my fingerprints, my photo also. So they got my photo, my fingerprints, FBI background check. I was also required to go through, I want to say it was like 12 hours of firearms training. I think 10 of those hours was classroom work, which was a whole lot of good education, you know, firearms in general and kind of what to do and what not to do. And some of these issues about stand your ground, this, you know, what do you do if type of thing or when and you know, when to shoot, when not to shoot. So it's a lot of very good training, as well as I think there was 2 hours out on a shooting range for marksmanship training. So why do I like the idea of Claremont County being a leader in the number of concealed carry permits? Well, you know, it tells me people are either concerned or they're reading in the newspaper about crimes that are committed, and nobody wants to be a victim. Nobody has to be a victim. You know, nobody wants to be, you know, a fish in a barrel. So if they have a license to carry and then they feel like for whatever reason they need to or just simply want to, then they'll be able to do that. And the more people who are carrying, the more likely it is that when a bad guy is doing something bad, that there would be somebody there to stop him until the police can arrive.
Janaea? No. We don't want – and I'll say this, I'm not against guns. I'm not against concealed carry. Have one. If you come in my house and try to hurt myself or my family, you're probably not going to leave the same way you came in. So I'm not against guns. I'll say that. What I am against is putting ordinary citizens with a few hours of training in the place of police officers. And so I don't want to be at a bank and someone comes in with their concealed carry and someone else tries to rob the bank and they decide that they want to play police officer today. And so they start trying to shoot at the robbers or what have you. I don't want someone else to play that. I want the trained people. I want everybody to get on the ground and wait until the people who are trained to do this get there. Because what happens is that now you have ordinary people running around who have only had a few hours worth of training to get your concealed and carry. And I can't remember the number of hours you do go through live training with someone who is licensed to do so. And so I went through my training with a police officer. And so, you know, yes, you're trained, but not to the level of an officer who has to go every year and spend so many hours in training and all of this. So we just don't want to encourage vigilante justice. And I think that's what we do when we say we want citizens to be able to protect people until officers get there.
We're going to go now to Jeff in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Jeff. What's your question?
It's a question and probably more exactly a comment. I have been in law enforcement as a career. I've been a police officer in two different jurisdictions. I've been a prosecutor most of my adult life. And my take on stand your ground is the same complaint, if you will, that the Florida prosecutors make, in that the essence of this law changes self-defense from its historic context of an affirmative defense. That is, if you have taken a life and it's to be legally justified, you, the individual who took the life, have to explain and convince a jury by a preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt, that this very most serious thing that can be done, taking someone's life, is legally justified. But when you plug in stand your ground, what you get is shifting the burden of proof to the prosecutor to disprove that it was a valid exercise. And that, in life and in law, becomes a much more difficult proposition. My brothers and sisters in Florida complain that prosecutions become difficult. For example, they've had this spate of drug dealers shooting other drug dealers and standing back, thumbing their nose at the police and the prosecutor and say, disprove that I wasn't in immediate fear of my life. And it sort of made that kind of assassination legally possible because, as in the case with Trayvon Martin, there are two witnesses. Mm-hmm. One of them is dead, and the other can sit back and say, okay, prove that it was not self-defense.
Representative Becker, what are your...
When you've got nobody alive to do that, it becomes very, very difficult. Now,
let's let the representative respond here. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, at the end of the day, the jury decides, and they have to decide beyond a reasonable doubt to convict that the victim who then shot the assailant was not justified in that shooting.
Well, that's not correct. The reason that that's not correct is that what the prosecution has is the burden of proof. They have the burden of establishing all the elements of the offense. And what Stand Your Ground does is it shifts this historic tradition of valuing life to the government to disprove that the loss of life was justified. And in any other thing, mm-hmm. Representative, with all due respect, disprove to me that you don't beat your wife. When I say that, you say, no, wait a minute, that's not right. You prove that I'm doing something wrong. That's the fair way. But Stand Your Ground is this thinly, in my judgment, and this is...
Jeff, I'm a career law and order guy.
Mm-hmm. In my judgment, it invites something that I don't think we want and don't think that we need.
Thank you so much for your call. We certainly appreciate your perspective. 513-419-7100 is our phone number. We're going to go now to, David from Claremont County. I think we tried to get you on before. Hi, David.
Thank you. I'm glad your phones are working now.
Me too.
Yes.
It seems to me that we're living in a time of a ramping up of gun violence. And this law, instead of reducing the potential for violence, it increases that. It's sponsored by gun zealots who promote the use of guns to solve problems, and I think it is to the detriment of our society. It turns everyone into a vigilante, if I may say. So I think what we're looking for now, based upon the repeated incidents of a gun violence, are laws that reduce the risk of gun violence, not increase it as this one does. And I'm astonished that Ohio is in fact even considering such a law, considering what's happened in Florida, plus the rest of the ramping up of gun violence in our society.
David, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We're going to go now to Jay from Northside, who I know we also tried to get on a few times earlier. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
There you are.
Great. My story doesn't have to do specifically with gun violence, but 9 years ago I was on my way to work at an evening job on a city bus, and I was attacked by a juvenile. A fight ensued, and at a critical moment I was scared that if I hurt this juvenile that I would be in big trouble. I lost the fight. I got a shoulder disconnect or
separated or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm not comfortable being on the same side as the forces of reaction and repression, but just as a philosophical thing, you know, if I'm under attack, I ought to be able to defend myself.
Shania?
And self-defense. I mean, if you felt like your life was in danger at that moment and you punched him harder, whatever action you felt like you would have been in trouble for doing, if he was at that, if you had not instituted, because in self-defense, which I think is missing greatly from this particular, the wording in this bill, the before you can assert the self that you're acting in self-defense, you cannot be the perpetrator. The law is very clear on that. So you cannot create the circumstances which then made you say, I had to defend myself. So in saying that, if you were on that bus and all the buses have video and you were attacked by this young man and you felt like your life was in danger and you did something to protect yourself, self-defense laws would have adequately protected you from that. And I don't think that you need new legislation to be further protected. You were already protected at that moment if you took action and you felt like your life was in danger. And there's video everywhere. So, you know, you can see what happened. So I don't think we need new laws for that.
Thanks for your call so much, Jay. We appreciate it. We go now to Nicole from Northside. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I find myself interested in asking on the folks on the panel whether or not it is actually even a legal thing, something that came up a little bit earlier, for a person who has a concealed carry to shoot someone who's gone on a shooting rampage. Is that actually a legal thing to do?
So if it's not yourself, you mean not so much that you personally are being threatened, but that you see that others are?
That's right. Mm-hmm. If that was something that came up a little bit earlier, that if a bad guy is doing something bad, if somebody else is around with a gun,
is that legal?
They're likely to be able to take care of it.
Janae, yes. That is legal. All right, she says it's legal.
It is. It's already currently written in the law that you can specifically self-defense or defense of another. So, yes.
Okay, so you have to follow.
I find myself agreeing with Janae that I find that problematic. I find it problematic that we would be trusting, we would put our faith in your average citizen to behave like. It's not like it's a video game where there's not adrenaline. And I would prefer that someone who is trained to handle an altercation of that sort to be in charge of shooting people.
Howard,
John,
to decide when it's appropriate to do something like that.
Howard?
John, you were nodding your head.
I agree with the caller and what Janae said earlier about, we don't want people with concealed carry permits to think they're a replacement for the police. And sure, my first choice or anybody's first choice would have the police involved in handling crime. The problem is the police aren't everywhere all the time. We as a citizens are. And if we are armed and there's something bad going on where there's a mass shooting of some sort, until the police can arrive, you know, hopefully there's somebody there who can handle it, where lives can be saved because somebody had a firearm.
Nicole, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Brian's calling from Kenwood. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, I just have a couple comments. One is, I was robbed at gunpoint. Actually had a gun held to my head in a restaurant in Denver in 1988. Had there been somebody who pulled a weapon there, I'd be a dead man because there were robbers, there were three or four robbers, and only two of them were visible. So I wouldn't want somebody, even necessarily a trained person, would not have been able to ascertain what happened. No one pulled the gun. Everybody got robbed. We all lived. By the way, I should say that I am a gun owner, so I don't have a problem with people owning guns. Secondly, in Colorado, they had the first one of these laws. It was called the Make My Day Law. When that law was passed, by a similar House and Senate makeup in the Colorado state government, almost every police agency was opposed to the law. I haven't heard anybody comment on what police agencies think about this expansion of a perfectly good self-defense law. The Make My Day law allowed you to shoot anyone on your property.
Thoughts, everybody?
They're against it.
Excuse me?
For the most part.
For the most part, the law enforcement agencies, I believe the National Association of Prosecutors, is against the Stand Your Ground laws.
Well,
what does that tell you?
John. The law enforcement was largely against concealed carry to begin with. And, of course, there was all these, all this fear about there was going to be, Wild West shootings in the street and, in parking lots and, intersections. Well, none of that ever happened. So, once again, law enforcement was wrong on a gun issue.
Well,
now I can tell you this. In my job when I lived in Colorado, I was friends, close friends, with a number of Arapahoe County sheriffs. And that's the area south of Denver, Littleton, Nice.
And what did they tell you?
Area. There were two of them that were certain that the Make My Day law, which allowed people to shoot anybody that they felt threatened by on their property, was used as an excuse for a murder. And they were convinced of it.
Well, thank you for your call, Brian. I do need to move on. Sure. We've got some other folks here, but thank you so much. We appreciate it. Janaea?
If I could just jump in for a minute. Since 2005, there's been a study done by Texas A&M, which is kind of the leading study out there, per se. And there have been, in the states with Stand Your Ground laws enacted, Florida was the first one, an increase in justifiable, and I put that in quotes, homicides increased 8%. To a number of 600 justifiable homicides. So those are 600 lives that have been lost as a result of someone claiming Stand Your Ground defense.
I think that's a good thing. If it's justifiable, I mean, that's really the point. I'd rather have the bad guy be in a coffin than the good guy being in the coffin.
But like I think one of the callers said, is that when you get into this situation with Stand Your Ground, all you have is the person left holding the gun. You don't know what happened in these cases. So, I mean, I don't necessarily tend to disagree with you that, hey, it's better to have the bad guy so that they don't continue to victimize people. But we don't know. We only have the side of the person who's left living, not the person who was killed. And again, we don't know if they could have even raised a regular self-defense claim as opposed to Stand Your Ground. So.
Ann's calling from North Avondale. Hi, Ann. What's your comment?
Hello?
Yes, Ann, you're on the air. Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Sure.
My concern with this law actually is many. And one, I'm concerned as to whether or not we're trying to work toward a civilized society or a retrograde society. Because it seems to me what we're trying to work toward right now is a retrograde society in which everybody's going to have their weapon, and if they don't like the person that pulled a gun on them. And what if it's a toy gun that looks like a gun?
Representative Becker, your thoughts to her concerns?
You're killing someone. And this is not only in Ohio or here in Hamilton County. This is our entire country because we're talking about 26 states, which is more than half of the states.
We're short on time, so I want the representative to have a chance to respond.
Well, sure. I mean, nobody wants accidental shootings to occur or unnecessary shootings to occur. It's just, the idea is that, nobody needs to be a victim. Nobody wants to be a victim. And if you have the ability to shoot back, that is what you should do to protect your own life.
What about her thoughts about a toy gun?
That's something the police also have to deal with. They have shot people with toy guns. And, usually I think they call that suicide by cop because they want to die, and unfortunately they wind up getting their wish. But and back to Janae's point, a policeman is going to be better trained at making that type of decision. But if somebody's pointing a gun at me and asking for my wallet, and I have the opportunity to pull mine and shoot, I think they're going to shoot me. I can't tell if it's a toy gun or not. Then I think a jury would find that as justifiable.
Janaea?
I would this will be a time I agree with Representative Becker. If you point a gun at someone and they don't know whether it's real or not, they have the right to defend themselves. But I'll go back to my point. I think you would be adequately protected by our current self-defense laws in that particular circumstance. Yes,
and thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Okay. And, you know, what about this question of vigilantism, you know, where everybody is walking around packing heat, you know, and concealed, not openly.
We've got about 30 seconds here.
Well, sure. Yeah, on that topic, you know, keep in mind who are the people who are allowed to get a concealed carry permit. You know, these are people I call the cream of crop of society. They're the people who have the clean records. They're the people who can go through the background checks or the people who can get fingerprinted and get their photo taken, can pay the fee. They're responsible citizens. They are the people least likely to be a vigilante.
Janaea, 10 seconds.
10 seconds. I think the House Bill 203 is expanding what people who can get concealed carries now. And so we don't know if they're the cream of the crop anymore. So I'm against it.
All right. Thank you both for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. Cincinnati Edition is produced by Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Rick Andrus. I'm Marianne Zalesnik with Howard Wilkinson.